The Johnson Wax Program. The makers of Johnson's Wax, Johnson's self-polishing glow coat, and Johnson's car new present the brilliant conductor-composer of melody, Meredith Willson, and MGM's noted young commentator star and teller of amazing tales, John Nesbitt. Ladies and gentlemen, this program, in the words of John Nesbitt and the music of Meredith Willson, with the songs of Connie Haynes and Bob Carroll, is sent to you by S.C. Johnson & Son, makers of Johnson's Wax Finishes for Home and Industry. And now here are Meredith Willson and John Nesbitt.
Good evening, everyone. Hello, Meredith.
Hello, John.
Good evening, all.
Our two stars worked all day Sunday out at Meredith's house on the reading and music of John Nesbitt's story for this evening. Meredith plays the piano while John reads. Then they argue busily for a while, and the music begins again. How did you finally come out, John?
Why, Harlow, tonight we have a story of the Revolutionary War period, and I began to fear on Saturday night that in his musical zeal, Meredith would write such loud war music that the orchestra would drown out the reading. So about 11:30 or 12 on Sunday, I phoned him up and got him out of bed and went over and we thrashed out the problem.
Well, you seem to have found the right solution.
Well, you see, we have a special system for that. I can't read a note of music, so I agree to whatever Meredith puts down, and after discussing it sagely all day, he does exactly as he pleases.
So you see the advantages of a system, Harlow.
I see, Meredith.
But we also planned some straight musical entertainment that was beautifully free of commentators. Mm-hmm. To begin with, for example, we learned that this evening marks the 152nd anniversary of the United States Coast Guard, which is one of the greatest bodies of men ever to work for America. Their job is to save lives, not to destroy them. And now that we're at war, the Coast Guard has become an enormously important body. Its motto is Semper Paratus, which means always ready. And to that motto has been written a grand march tune, which goes like this.
Department of Lost Music, the melodies that all musical experts call outstanding, but for unknown reasons have never reached the public. John?
Why, this evening's number is in the Lost Music group for the rather interesting reason that its composer wanted it to be lost and has kept it that way for many years. It's a very quiet, pleasing, and beautiful melody, which was composed by the noted songwriter Louis Alter, one of whose great successes, you may remember, was Manhattan Serenade. For years, this melody has been going round in his mind, but he has never been able to find words for it or even a title. It has always defeated every effort of its creator to turn it into a song. But here, lest it remain a lost melody forever, is Meredith Willson's scoring of it for all of us to hear. Louis Alter's melody, A Song Without Words or Title. another lost melody is presented to the public for the first time to see if it will find a place for itself at last. Harlow Wilcox is placing himself before his microphone now to bring his message of business.
Have you looked closely and critically at the finish of your car lately? If you haven't, be sure to do so next time you drive. See if the finish is rough instead of smooth. A rough finish, you know, collects and holds road scum and dirt, lets them penetrate and do damage. If you look at that finish under a microscope, you'd realize how important it is to give your car a good cleaning and polishing occasionally with Johnson's Car New. The satin, smooth, sparkling finish you get with Car New not only makes you feel like you're driving a new car, it will help you keep your car new looking 1, 2, or 3 years from now. Johnson's Car New is a great labor saver because it both cleans and polishes with one application. Does two jobs at once in quick time. No matter how little you're driving these days, don't neglect that finish. And if you want added protection and big savings on car washing, you can also apply a coat of Johnson's Auto Wax or the regular Johnson's Wax. But remember this week to buy a package of Johnson's Car New, spelled C-A-R-N-U. And here is another of the amazing true tales on which the brilliant reputation of John Nesbitt has been based. His title for tonight is The Man Who Could Not See.
At this moment on the desk of the president are either 7 or 8 warrants awaiting signature. If he signs them with his name, it is believed some of the men will die. The convicted Nazi spies. Now these men at least can be understood. They are fanatical Hitlerites, paid to do an act of war here, landed here for that reason, and their capture places them tonight at the doorway of doom. These men, it's presumed, hate our country. But what about the people among us who are citizens, who say and perhaps believe that they love America, who are nonetheless unwitting traitors, those who have no real faith in our future, who still place themselves above the needs of our country at a time like this? What is the sickness that is in these people's minds? Are they diseased or just plain stupid? We take from yesterday one of the supremely dramatic stories of the passing parade to try and see what light can be thrown upon the people who dwell under the same shelter of our flag and yet seek to destroy all that it can mean. It is a chilly, black-clouded, thunder-split night, September 22nd, 1779. And along a country highway that parallels the Hudson River, 3 men on horseback gallop at full pace. Their streaming faces bent into the driving rain, their long coats soaked, their beaver hats dripping. A few miles south, a black figure like a ghost suddenly rises up ahead of them in the darkness. A man on horseback. Halt! Show your passes! But the 3 men post by without stopping. 2 shots ring out, but they're away, and in a moment they disappear. Now one of these men is a servant. Another is a country squire named Joshua Smith. The third is a good-looking English officer, Major John Andre. And the next day, still galloping, he rides along alone toward New York. And against the sole of his right foot, inside the thick sock, are 6 sheets of paper. 6 bits of paper containing the supreme act of treachery known to the history of the United States. And now, another scene. Friday night has passed, the storm has cleared, Saturday gone by, and now it's Sunday morning. We're inside a pleasant little cottage at West Point. It's sunny and cheerful. And a man and his wife sit at breakfast, sipping their Sunday morning coffee. The wife is a pretty, rosy-cheeked woman, dressed in an expensive feminine dressing robe. The man is heavily built, and he sits quietly, lost in thought, while his wife prattles cheerfully on about the latest social events and her new hats and gowns. But her husband pays no attention, for inside his brain, this man is praying, hoping, beseeching the God of traitors to give him success. Across the Hudson River, he knows, is a huge iron chain. It is there to keep British warships from going up the river. But now one of its massive links has been filed and the ends tied together with a few strands of rope darkened with soot. Only this man, the commanding general of West Point, knows which link is broken. All he has to do is take his sword, slash at that particular spot, and the enemy navy will sweep in and capture West Point by surprise. And this bright Sunday morning, as he sits at breakfast, the general is about to carry out an amazing idea. The belief that since the American colonies have tricked him, that the manipulation of paper money has ruined him financially, that therefore he has the right to betray America. Then he thinks to himself, the war will come to an end, peace come back, and surely he will be called in England the savior of an empire. For this man, of course, is Benedict Arnold. Then he and his wife look up suddenly, for a thunderclap shakes their cottage. Almost at once, the storm breaks out again. Rain comes down again, and he hears a messenger pounding up at the door. He rushes out of the house, stumbles through the mud to the horse's side. What news? Takes a letter, tears it open, standing in the rain, reads it. His face turns white, for the message reads, Major John Andre has been captured, is to be searched by American authorities. And in that second, a new country is saved and a man is ruined. And somewhere at this moment, old comrades are saying that General Benedict Arnold is the greatest traitor of history. Arnold turns back to the house. In a rush of words, he cries out his guilt to his wife, leaps on a horse and lashes it into a gallop, goes down the same highway taken by Andre 2 nights before, and in a few hours he is free, safely behind the British lines, perfectly safe, a free man. And so the story ends. The familiar sixth grade history story of the man named Benedict Arnold. But there is a scene that's seldom given. Many years have passed, and from nation to nation, continent to continent, this great soldier goes offering his sword, his military genius, his famed courage and his skill. But nobody talks to him. When he calls for a drink at a bar, the other men quietly leave the room, and Benedict Arnold always drinks alone. And at the very end, in a rambling country house in England, when he's a very old man, he sits by the fire, dressed in a tattered dressing gown, looking into the flames and wondering if anybody will come to call on him. But the British people will not shake his hand. The one crying desire of his fading life is to have someone, anybody, to talk to try to explain. But no one pays him a visit. And one night alone, Benedict Arnold finds the one friend who never forgets to call, however much a man is shunned by everyone else. The last caller is death. What happened inside the mind of this old, broken man that turned him from a brave soldier, a fine officer, a great general, into a traitor? Well, you see, democracy had let him down. It hadn't worked well during several years. It had cost him all his savings, swept away by inflation. He saw politicians cheating the people. He saw unemployment. He saw waste and confusion and red tape. So he tried our little democracy in his own mind, found plenty of things wrong, and so he condemned it, and so, still blinded, he went over to the enemy. He saw the failures and problems of our country, failures and problems which will always exist, but he apparently saw nothing else. He didn't have the kind of eyes that could see that the American idea was a thing that worked. Most of our unwitting traitors tonight are in this stage. They say you can't see freedom, you can't eat freedom, you can't wear freedom in a cold night. You can't put freedom on the rims of your automobile wheels. And you can't pour freedom into the empty gas tank. So it's no good. Maybe it doesn't even exist. It doesn't exist for them. When you no longer believe in freedom, brother, you no longer have it. Nor was any freedom to come ever again. anywhere on earth to Benedict Arnold, who couldn't see America clearly enough, and who 141 years ago went stumbling out of the passing parade forever.
Another of those well-known musical salads of Meredith Wilson's, in which he blends many a divergent tune into one masterwork of consistent melody. The tunes that may well become part of the folk songs of tomorrow. As usual, Meredith does his own explaining.
All of this music you're about to hear, written by a fellow whose name was once Izzy Baleen. He carried beer around to tables in New York's East Side for a while, learned how to paint out his black eyes well enough to keep from being fired from his jobs as a waiter, picked up a little piano playing from banging on a saloon upright with one finger, and somehow, through the years of poverty and bad breaks, managed to pour out some of the sweetest music that any American of our day has produced. Now he's 54 years old, one of the leading figures of the entertainment world, busy with new war songs and shows and bond sale drives, but in his heart he's still that little fellow from the East Side, who loved melody so much that he gave his life to it. His name, of course, is Irving Berlin, and his music is part of the voice of America when America sings.
How much would I cry? How deep is the ocean? How high is the sky?
Good night comments in a moment, but first may I bring you a few words from the Johnson people. If yours is an average kitchen, it's probably seeing a little extra service these days. It's surprising how kitchen home arts are being revived. More canning and bread making, which for my money is a very good idea. Now it means more traffic, of course, on the linoleum floor, and a little more spilling. But for floors that are protected with Johnson's self-polishing glow coat, that surely doesn't matter. Really, it's so easy to safeguard your linoleum surfaces, preserve their colors, and make them last longer with occasional applications of Glow Coat. There's practically no work involved. You just apply and let dry without any rubbing or buffing. Glow Coat is self-polishing. And you know that it's more enjoyable to work in a beautiful kitchen than in one that's on the dull side. Why not use Johnson's self-polishing Glow Coat on your linoleum floors?
Just time enough to send a card of congratulations from us all to the United States Coast Guard on this occasion of its 152nd birthday, an organization too often given second place to the other important services of the war effort. But until, with Meredith Wilson, Connie Haynes, Bob Carroll, and Harlow Wilcox, we join you again a week from tonight, John Nesbitt bids a very good evening to you all.
Speaking for the makers of Johnson Wax finishes for the home and industry, this is Harlow Wilcox inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night. This program reaches you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
This is Chicago, WMAQ.